Eric Hurley, Gary McNamara, retired senior trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol. Yay! That means it's Ask the Law. Welcome to Ask the Law for Monday, December 6, 2010. Service of Old Blue USA, thank you for being here. We are with retired senior trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol. And the information and answers to questions are up to date as of today, can change without notice. Any statements or comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial are considered to be opinions only. AskTheLaw.org is the website, and they've got a big red button that says email Ask the Law. You can submit your questions anytime right there at the website. Gentlemen, how about them Cowboys?
I didn't watch them.
Nobody cares because they're totally out of the playoffs now. I only watched them because I couldn't sleep. I thought, okay, I'll turn over and see how bad it was. And it was pretty good until you know. Thank you, Mr. Manning, by the way, for helping us win that game. We appreciate that.
I had an excuse.
You do. You were out working.
I was out working.
You were actually working, baling some hay.
Yes,
stacking them deep. Selling them cheap. I guess you weren't buying them cheap, were you?
No.
Well, I've been there before.
Pile it higher and deeper.
That's right. Well, and I've been there before. Gentlemen, welcome to the very last Ask the Law, possibly the last, and we thought last time would be the last Ask the Law before we hear on Hours of Service, because a couple of things have happened. You know, it's funny because Gary and I, Trooper Dial, Gary and I were talking a week or two before Thanksgiving. And I said, well, you know, we're supposed to hear something by December 1st is what they said. You know, it doesn't guarantee anything. And Gary said, yeah, they'll probably issue it the day before Thanksgiving, on a Wednesday before Thanksgiving when it's a dead news cycle and nothing happens and it'll be buried. And, of course, the industry was waiting with, as we still are, with bated breath. And then they came out and said the DOT had a release that said, yeah, we're going to hear something on Hours of Service, and we expect to hear it by November 26th, which was the Friday after Thanksgiving.
Right.
And then, of course, our friends at thetrucker.com, they wrote an article and said, well, don't wait around too late because this is kind of the norm. Have you heard any other reports other than that, other than we expect to hear anytime soon? I haven't even heard any new dates. I know the delay is back. But I haven't heard any new dates.
I haven't heard anything, and I guess everybody's got their own version as to why.
Well, you know, the ATA, I guess you saw this story. The ATA now believes, for whatever reason, and we don't know. I don't have any contacts at the AT&T, at the ATA, or AT&T, for that matter.
They are a monopoly.
Yeah, well, they are. and I do have some there, but I haven't had any that have contacted me to tell us why they believe that the driving hours would be reduced.
Well, there's been several, ATA's one of them. There's been several other groups that I've taken and read some of their articles that they have posted. And everyone that I've read is of the opinion that they're going to drop the driving hours back.
Right. And it stands to reason that the 10 hours would come back. We have no reason to believe it would be 9 hours.
Correct. Right. Well, but here again, you know, this is just speculation.
All speculation.
All speculation. Everybody's
part. We don't
part.
Even know if it's going to drop at all.
No, we don't. Sure. And they're reporting that there's going to be a mandatory break in your 14-hour. They're also going to up the reset to 48 instead of 34. Mm.
It makes you wonder with that mandatory break, because this is what the ATA is speculating. The report that came out last week that the ATA is speculating that the drive time hours would be reduced, that there would be a mandatory break sometime within your 14 in that day.
Right.
And that the 34-hour restart would likely be lengthened. Gosh, if it's lengthened, I don't know if they're talking just a couple of hours, which would be 36 hours, or if they're talking a full 48. We have no idea. And the ATA doesn't either.
No.
But there's some reason that they are speculating here. We just don't know what that is. But it does have me wonder, the break, that two-hour mandatory break. Now, the ATA has considerable connections, and that one is kind of new to me. Had you heard that one before, that report last week?
No, I have not.
I haven't heard that one.
I haven't heard that one either. But the thing that gets me is, let's say, for an example, that both of us are over-the-road drivers.
Right.
And you want to take a break, then having that mandatory break in there is going to help you.
Hmm.
I'm the type that I don't want a break. But yet now then, because it's being written or it's been reported that this break is going to be in there, now then it's fixing to penalize me,
right?
Because now I have to stop and take that break.
Right.
You know, why can't they make it optional?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's because if there is that mandatory break, it also makes me wonder about that 70 hours.
Yeah.
Because if you're making them take a mandatory break in the middle, somewhere, and I don't know, but sometime during that 14 hours, that then it tells me that it probably wouldn't count against your 70.
No,
I can't imagine.
No, it will not count if the mandatory break is put in there, mm-hmm. as has been reported. You would go to off duty.
Yeah.
And anything on line one off duty does not count against.
Because that's what happens right now. If you take a 2-hour break during the day right now, if you break it up 8 and 2, and you take that 2-hour break, that 2-hour, your 14 still keeps rolling, but it does not count against your 70.
Correct.
So we'll see what happens. That whole story was intriguing on many levels for me, because, again, I know some people at the ATA. I have. I wouldn't say I'm as close to them as I would be in OOIDA. I have more considerable connections there. But I know enough about that organization to know that if they have built a website, which is kind of where all this led to, and you can read this story. It's one of the stories at our website now, midnighttrucking.com. But if you look at it, they said that they built a website basically in response to that. So it tells me, wow, if they're going out of their way to make such a point to counter these items that they're speculating on, there must be something behind that speculation. Yep. I just don't know what it is.
Did you read one of the stories, and I don't remember which publication it came out in.
Yeah.
But they were reporting that the reason FMCSA is not issuing the NPRM is they want to wait till all the Christmas shopping is done. Because of the impact.
I'll tell you, that makes a little more sense in today's economy, because if you look at the way that this administration, the White House, has been reacting to what's going on, obviously with the economy, they're walking on eggshells with everything they do.
Well, there was one of them that, and here again, this is being numbers being thrown around.
Right.
I don't know that it's a hard number, but they were saying that by reducing the driving from 11 hours to 10 hours, it was going to cost the trucking industry somewhere in the neighborhood of $2.5 billion dollars annually.
Yeah, $2.5 billion. Because look at this. If there is a mandatory break, if you are, and we don't know if the drive time hours are limited. I don't know if the 14 hours are going to be limited to, but if there is a mandatory break, if there is a mandatory shutdown every day, imagine that. In the 14 years this week that I have been doing this program, there has always, and for how many decades you were doing commercial vehicle enforcement, there was always talk of a shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it was, let's shut it down for one day or 2 days. And, of course, that type of organized protest never happened.
Correct.
There were protests, but it never happened on a national scale. This would be a mandatory shutdown of the trucking industry. I'm trying to put this all in perspective. A mandatory shutdown of the movement of commerce for 2 hours every single day.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of things that have to happen in order to make up for this, because commerce still has to move.
Mm-hmm.
We're still, as consumers, going to insist that the bread and the milk are on the shelves when we get to that store. And as such, they're going to have to increase the number of trucks on the road.
Yes.
What does that do to safety numbers? Wow, there's a lot to talk about here. Listen, we've got Lewis, Sean, and more. Sean, one of the classic questions on Ask the Law. Sean, stand by, buddy. We're going to get to your question, Lewis, and more.
Yeah, but as soon as you answer this question, you're going to get email for the next month telling you that you're wrong.
It's okay, because I like reading this time of year. We look forward to your emails here on Ask the Law. So here's the deal. Get through right now. This is going to be a good one. 800-288-9227. You got a question for Trooper Dial about any regulation, any regulatory item, CSA 2010, hours of service. Now, again, what we've been talking about is speculation. The questions he can answer for sure are on the current hours of service rule, that being the 2005 rule that's been in effect since 2005. And so if you want to ask some questions specifically about those, please don't ask about speculation, because we really don't know. We've been talking here, but when it comes to Q&As, we want to stick to the facts, and your questions are always important. We want to make sure that we get you accurate information here. So 800-288-9227. Drivers, get on board right now. It's Ask the Law, probably the most popular radio program on the air right now. 800-288-9227. We are back in just a moment.
On the Midnight Radio Network. It's the Midnight Radio Network and Ask the Law with retired senior trooper Monty Dial. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley.
All the information and answers to questions are up to date as of today. December 6, 2010 can change without notice. Comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial are considered to be opinions only. And let's get right to your question.
Let's talk to Sean on 97 in Washington State. Sean, hi. You're on the Midnight Radio Network. Welcome.
Hi, fellas.
Hey.
Hey, I was just asking about firearm rules regarding truck drivers and the where you can find information about that in the book, you know.
And we'll give you the and we realize, by the way, Sean, we've got a lot of new listeners constantly to this program, but I'll let Trooper Dial give you the answer that he's given for many years on this subject. Wait a minute. Once I turn his microphone on. Yeah.
There are no regulations in the Green Book that addresses carrying a firearm in a commercial vehicle. What we rely on is whether or not your state has a concealed handgun permit. If it does, then you are allowed to carry in your home state, as well as any state that has reciprocity with your home state. If you go into a state that does not have reciprocity, then you fall back under the alcohol, tobacco, firearm rules, which means you can transport it, provided that it is unloaded and properly stored out of the driver's reach.
Right, okay. Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I thought. A buddy of mine travels interstate. I'm one of those intrastate drivers, and I never really leave this state. But
right.
And he's talking about going to stop at Cabela's and pick up something on the way back, and he's pretty sure he's allowed to do that. But I told him I wasn't quite sure.
Yeah, if he stops at one of the major sporting goods stores to buy a firearm for a Christmas present or a birthday present or some type of present for himself, as long as it is properly stored, the ATF rules allow him to transport that vehicle from state or transport that firearm from state to state without any penalty.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Cool. Thank you very much. We do appreciate that. And we get that question from time to time. It's one of the most highly debated questions that we get, because we'll get a lot of, you may have a policy in place.
Yes.
Your carrier.
Yeah. Some
that
companies,
says you can't.
Right. Some companies have written policies.
Right.
That says, irregardless of whether you have a concealed handgun permit or not,
mm-hmm.
you cannot transport one in our vehicle.
Right.
And if that's a company policy,
right,
you work for them, you got to abide by the company policy.
And again, the state-to-state rule, if there is no conceal and carry law or above or outside of the conceal and carry law, is that unload the firearm, it has to be out of the reach. Does it have to be stored separately from the ammunition?
Typically what I try to do, tell everybody to do is, you know, get you some type of soft case, hard case, whatever.
Right.
And, you know, unload it. And if you've got separate compartments or if you've got one of those hard compartments that's got the foam, put the bullets in the bottom of it, put the foam back in.
Yeah.
That way there's nothing there to encourage you to quickly grab it, try to load it up, whatever.
Okay, it's not an immediate threat to anyone at
Correct.
That point. So just make sure you're aware of that and be safe. We always want you to be safe. AskTheLaw.org, by the way, is the website. You can always submit your CMV questions. Go there to the website and click on that big red button that says email Ask the Law. Make sure you tell them you heard it on Midnight Trucking, okay? All right, back to your questions. We got more people. And if you want to get on board right now, it's Ask the Law. Do it right now.
At 800-288-9227. It's the Midnight Radio Network and Ask the Law. 800-288-9227. I'm Gary McNamara with Eric Harlan.
Retired Senior Trooper Imani Dial is here, courtesy of Ask the Law and Old Blue USA. We thank you, AskTheLaw.org and Old Blue USA, for making this possible. The website, go there anytime. Submit your CMV questions. Just click on that big red button that says email Ask the Law. All the information and answers to questions are up to date. As of today, December 6, 2010, can change without notice, and the comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial are considered to be opinions only. And we've got plenty of questions to be answered right now. Let's do that. 800-288-9227. By the way, coming up, some new information, what Trooper Dial has learned in recent days about CSA 2010. You're going to want to hear that. So coming up, we'll do that in just a few minutes. Let's get back to you right now.
Let's talk to Lewis on I-10. Lewis, hi. You're on the Midnight Radio Network. You're on Ask the Law. Welcome. Hi.
Hi. Well, thank you. I got a question. I got a warning the other day in New Mexico for speeding. Didn't get a ticket, a warning. How does that affect CSA? If that's a possible answer to that question.
Got a question, Lewis. Did they give you a roadside inspection, or was it just a warning?
He inspected my logbook.
Okay, but did here again for the violation to count on the CSA? They have to do a level 1, a level 2, a level 3, or a level 6 inspection. They have to give you the inspection report, and it has to show a level 1, 2, 3, or 6.
Okay, I got the inspection report right here because it just happened the other day. I think it was a level 3. He said brake adjustments, no...
If it was a level 3 inspection, then that violation will count on CSA. FMCSA went back in and after listening to the stakeholders, and what they did was reduced the point value based upon how fast you were going over the speed limit. If it was 1 to 5 miles over the posted speed limit, I think it was a 1 point violation versus a 5 under the old rule. If it was 6 to 10, it was I believe it's 2. If it was 11 to 15, I think it was 3. And then they went in, and if you actually got a citation for it, it even increased the point value up to 5.
Okay, well, I appreciate it. Yeah, it was for 7 over, but no citation issued. It's just the inspection report, and all it says was violations, and it gives a code where it says citation number. It's blank. and he told me it was a warning.
Okay.
So I'm just going to give you a warning.
Yeah, it'll. But yeah, because a warning was issued, it will count under the CSA point value when they roll it out.
I appreciate it. So then I'm already like 2 points in the hole with CSA then.
Well, it's going to be it'll be 6 points because what you have to do is the first 6 months it's multiplied times three. The next one is as it ages, it goes from 3 to 2 to 1 and then drops off.
Okay. Wow. All right. Hey, I appreciate it.
All right, Lewis. Thank you so much, and stay safe. Do those pre-trips. Do those inspections yourself before somebody else does. 800-288-9227. Right back to you. By the way, drivers, if you want to get in a question like that Lewis has, these are becoming some of the more frequent questions here on Ask the Law. This happened to me. How is this going to affect me on CSA 2010? We'd love to answer those questions for you right now. 800-288-9227. Let's get back to you.
Let's go to Cody on I-35. Cody, hi. You're on the Midnight Radio Network. You're on Ask the Law. Hi, Cody.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Yeah, my question was, okay, I run a lot of, primarily, I spend 90% of my time in the state of Texas. I mean, that's where I live, where we're based out of. Well, occasionally we run out of state. Well, I run, a 12 and 8 under the Texas law. How can I work that out to where I'm running, when if I go out of state, how many days I've been told so many different things, and I don't know what's the actual answer.
Okay, Cody, here, make sure you're paying attention now. If you are stopped at roadside, I'm going to talk about getting stopped at the road first. They are going to treat you based upon where you're coming from and where you're going to. So if the preceding 7 days you ran strictly Texas, before you leave on that interstate trip, you now have to have a 10-hour break, and then you start under the interstate rules. That's if you are stopped at roadside. Now, if a federal investigator or one of their state partners, which in this case would be Texas DPS, comes in to the company you work for and they do a compliance review, there is an interpretation that can be found in part 390 that says 7 days before or 7 days after, the driver has to be under the interstate rules if the driver makes an interstate trip.
Okay. Wow.
So that means that if this week you're going to operate strictly in Texas, next week they're going to send you out of state for a interstate run. That means that this week you have to go under the interstate rules.
What if he doesn't know? What if he doesn't know when he's going to be sent out of state?
Exactly.
That's,
I don't know from 1 minute to the next where I'm all cattle for a living. I never know from one day to the next.
Yeah. Well, in that case right there, if you never know, the safest bet is to stay under the interstate rules all the time.
Wow. How frequently do you go out, Cody? Do you go out of state?
Maybe 2 or 3 times a month at the most. Yeah.
That's why I wanted to make sure that you understand, because if a trooper stops you, he's going to treat you how you are operating at the time that you get stopped.
Correct.
But if FMCSA or their state partner comes knocking on the door and says, hey, we're going to do a compliance review, and they pull your logs, then what they're going to do is they're going to start scanning or start looking at those logs. As soon as they find where you went interstate, they're either going to go back 7 days or they're going to go forward 7 days. And if you were not under the interstate rules, then you're going to get written, or the company's fixing to get written up for violating, you know, 7 days violating the interstate rules.
Right, right. Now, that's okay. That's if I'm running Texas and then going out of state. What about if I'm, you know, if I have gone out of state and then when I come back into Texas, is it still the same way? Or?
Yeah, it's 7 days before or 7 days after.
All right.
See,
well,
they get to choose.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, but I've been told so many different things, several things, you know, but you just told me. I told you I have to run it on a trip by trip basis, and then it was told that, you know, restarts. And
yeah.
I said, well, I'll figure out a special phone call and ask.
No, here again, the 34 restart, that's going to be something that will take and help you if you're stopped at roadside.
Correct.
And but here again, you've got to remember in that interpretation in part 390 that says 7 days before or 7 days
right.
after, the driver has to be under the rules for interstate, and if not, if they find a 11 or a 14 hour violation, then each day is a separate violation.
I understand completely.
Yeah,
and especially if it's one of those that you only took an 8 hour break, because now then on the interstate side you got to have a 10 hour break. Well, guess what? Your clock still keeps running.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, so treat it like you're on the you interstate bet. Rule all the time, there, Cody. It sounds like.
I guess we will. We sure appreciate you, sir.
Okay. All right, Cody. Thanks, Cody. We appreciate it. Thank you. All right, drivers, you want to get on board, 800-288-9227. Those are the types of questions we can answer here for you. And coming up, ATA has more problems with the CSA 2010. They want some changes there, and they make some valid points here. We'll discuss all of that and what Trooper Dial has learned recently about CSA 2010, some of the items that pop up as red flags. You're going to want to be here for this. Get on board now. It is Ask the Law
on the Midnight Radio Network. It's the Midnight Radio Network and Ask the Law with retired senior trooper Monty Dial. I'm Gary McNamara with Eric Harley.
All right, 800-288-9227. Get on board, drivers. We do have room for you right now. All the information and answers are up to date as of today, December 6, 2010. Comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial are considered opinions only. Let's get right back to you at 800-288-9227.
Let's go to Heather in Cleveland, Ohio. Heather, hi. You're on the Midnight Radio Network. You're on Ask the Law. Welcome.
Yes, hi, I have a question. As a driver, how can I look up a company's CSA 2010 score?
Once FMCSA turns the switch off of SafeStat, that's the current system we are on right now.
And it's still in place. It was set to go to be turned off December 1st, but it's still online.
Now, December the 6th.
December 6th, which would be today.
Right.
Okay.
Was when they were supposed to turn the switch off of SafeStat and turn the switch on for CSA 2010. Last week, there were three organizations that filed a case in court claiming that FMCSA did not follow proper protocol.
Right.
And so now then, they didn't flip the switches today. They're possibly looking at flipping the switches on the 12th.
That's what I read. The 12th was the next day.
Right. Yeah, so once the switches are one's turned off and one's turned on, all you have to do is go on to FMCSA's website, and under safety and security, there'll be a new bullet added that you'll click on it, put in the motor carrier's USDOT number, and it'll bring you all the information up.
That's simple, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
It'll bring you up all the information on that motor carrier.
That's awesome.
Okay. The safety and security, and then the company's DOT number.
Right. But here again, like to say, what you'll have to do is wait until FMCSA turns the SafeStat switch off and turns the CSA switch on.
Should be sometime around the middle of this month, but don't hold your breath.
But yeah.
As far as obtaining a company's COT number, public information somewhere?
Yeah, what you can do is they'll have a way that you can either search by name.
Okay.
Or you can search by the U.S. DOT number.
All right. Thank you, Heather. We do appreciate that. Always glad to answer your questions on Ask the Law, and it continues. Get on board with us, drivers. Do it right now.
At 800-288-9227.